I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air, featuring influencers, creatives, and thought leaders in the Twin Cities. And now, here is our host, Steve LeBall.
Welcome to another edition of Synapse Think Tank of the Air. I'm your host, Steve LeBeau, and we have three wonderful guests today, all from the land of crooners. Find out about that as we proceed. But we have the ringleader, the key crooner, I guess, Mary Chesshold. Is that close to correct?
It's close, which is why I go by Mary T. You did good. You did good.
We'll stick with Mary T. And then we can handle a couple other names here. Andrew Walsh.
Perfect.
Hey.
Very few people get that the first time. Wonderful.
And I'll take that, Mary. And then we have Rick Davis.
That's right.
Did
correct.
You did that right?
You did that right.
Okay. Yeah. Should have gone to you first. So, now, Mary, we've met before, but I met you mainly as a business person, not as a music entrepreneur. Can you give me a short resume of all the different things you do? Because I know you're a business person, you're a humanitarian. And then you're kind of like a
jazz club owner.
Jazz club owner. That's the way to put it. I was trying to think of that woman in Paris that had the wild jazz club. Do you know her?
No.
20s.
I'll have to look it up and bring it back next time.
Yeah.
Nobody?
It'll come to our mind.
It'll come to our mind.
Well, just keep tell going. Me a little bit of the just the list of your humanitarian efforts. Let's start with that because we have like 20 minutes.
So I often walk through a door not knowing where I'm going, and then I just participate. And so I walked through a door for the ARC. I thought it was the Association of Retarded Citizens, and it was actually the American Refugee Committee. And we said we can do something. It was during the war in Sarajevo. We collected all kinds of medical supplies, health hospital supplies for seniors who were caught with no supplies during that war, and sent it over in a cargo ship, and thought that was the end. And then I got a call one day saying, do you want to go to Sarajevo? And I didn't know, but I thought to myself, well, I've never seen war. I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means for people. So I got on a plane, and
this was during the war.
This is during the war. Tanks, all of that.
So you got you enlisted.
Yes, and I went, and there was like no electricity. We couldn't turn our lights on in our hotel because of snipers, but we wanted to find out what was needed and how we could move forward as the American Refugee Committee and serving people during this war, whether it was food, whether it was housing, and then my next adventure or journey was to West Africa. I went to Sierra Leone. I went to Guinea, and then I got the call when I was there to go down to Liberia. And that was my first trip to Liberia and help set up a refugee camp along the airport. And this was also during the war when the ambassador's embassy had just been bombed a couple weeks before that. And we were confined to Monrovia. Previously, at some point, I had also gone to Gaza and had the opportunity to meet Mrs. Arafat and Arafat and visit the refugee camps.
And they let you in.
They let me in.
They're keeping so many people out, you know.
Yeah, they did. We were just trying to make a difference, you know, trying to bring water, trying to bring food, take a look at what's needed. Then the war really expanded in Gaza, and so humanitarian organizations were not going into that area. But I've been to Rwanda 3 times. visiting their refugee camps. Because as the chair of the board, I thought most important was to go into the field and make sure people know that people care about what's happening. And Minnesota is this hub of humanitarian organizations. So currently I sit on the board of the Center for Victims of Torture, which also started here in Minnesota. Then we have the Nonviolent Peace Force, which is also part of our festival on Sunday. Peace Force with Mel Duncan, who started here in Minnesota as well. So this is really, Minnesotans really care about what's happening in the world. Most of my work, of course, has been in areas where there's been violence, where there's people who have been tortured, people who need help in terms of moving through their torture, or who need places to live, who need food. So kind of people who have been affected by violence.
Well, I know Minnesota is also a destination for a lot of immigrants.
Yes, yes.
And many of whom are refugees, you know, from Somalia, from Southeast Asia.
From West Africa as well.
Right. Are many of those torture victims?
Yes. I mean, the Center for Victims of Torture's headquarters is actually in St. Paul. So a lot of them come here for services. But I visited Jordan, and in Jordan there are Iraqis, Somalians, Syrians who are getting services in Jordan. And then this summer I went to Uganda because that's all that torture that occurred from the Liberation Front that operated for about 19 years, whipped kids and children, you know, out of their homes, made them soldiers, had them kill family members and become soldiers. And so they're working with people who have experienced that violence.
Well, have you ever felt yourself in danger?
No.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It's called the positivity, that you can make a difference.
Wow.
So.
Gosh. Now, okay, so this is one part of your refugee. You go to war zones and help people.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, you run a jazz club.
Yeah.
Now, how does that all fit in your brain at the same time?
Well, that's what's going to happen on Sunday, is that we have this incredible festival of 15 bands that are, you know, focused as women, either women songwriters. And these organizations have been invited to set up booths so people can hear great music and also learn about the good work that's happening here in Minnesota. Maybe come involved.
So this is being recorded, so you might have a Sunday. What's the date of this event?
The 15th.
September 15th.
Yeah.
2019.
Right. 2019.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. And then another part of the humanitarian work is my mom and I started a school in Cameroon in 2000 called the Margaret Cheswold Nursery and Primary School. And so we built some schools. We employed teachers.
So every student at the school had to learn how to pronounce her name?
Yes. I know. But they went to Margaret. They went to my mom. So that worked a little bit better for them. And then she used to also feed them bread with chocolate.
Gosh, I'd like to meet your mom.
Yeah, yeah.
So is that how you learned to be such a big-hearted Minnesotan?
Actually, I think it started from with my grandmother. You know, the Great Depression, my grandmother and grandfather lived, which is now the Minnehaha Parkway. You know, a lot of homeless people lived in the Deer Pen and Minnehaha Falls. And they used to come up to the house, and my mom could feed them. My grandmother cooked all kinds of food. They couldn't come into the house, but my mom could go out and give them food. And so this giving back, yeah, bread and chocolate.
Wow. Gosh.
So I have great role models.
You were trained up. Now, but when I first met you, I was running Minnesota Business Magazine.
Yeah?
You were like a mega mucho entrepreneur. Tell me about your business holdings.
So we simply do what my grandmother does. Simply do, which was to take care of seniors and people with disabilities. So now we're in Maryland. We serve people, pretty exclusively people with brain injury, whose option is to be served by Mary T. Maryland or be in prison. In Minnesota, it's a... Yeah, see, the progress... But the progress made for people who've experienced some kind of brain trauma is huge these days.
Right.
We can make a difference.
And so tell me about your businesses. I mean, you mentioned Maryland. Do you have something in Minnesota too, don't you?
Minnesota, we do hospice, home health, senior housing, assisted living, services for people with brain injury.
How big is your business?
We have about 1,300 employees.
Holy.
In Arizona, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Maryland.
You're taking over the world, Mary.
No. Just making a difference one person at a time.
Wow. Now, tell me that the source of all your power is jazz.
Sure. Sure. It's music. Sure.
Because you haven't even mentioned crooners yet.
I know.
No. And that's kind of like your...
It's a community. It's a community.
Really?
Same thing I do in other places. It's a community of people who want to come in and shut out the world and get regenerated. It's a community for performers who want to come to a place that treats them well, that appreciates their talent, and it's hopefully it's a community for the employees as well, because that's what we believe Mary T does, is create communities.
Well, I like that idea. I have to confess and ask for forgiveness for not having been there.
Yes, I remember asking you years ago, I got this jazz club, you should come. And you'll get healed.
I'll get healed. Okay, it's a deal. But how did you get into jazz? Was that your grandmother too? Was she kind of a bopper?
It wasn't, but actually she used to play the guitar, and she used to travel around to people's homes and play the guitar. Andrew doesn't even know this. And my mom always tells the story that her friends always wanted to come to the house because my grandmother would play the guitar and sing for them. Well, I don't know what songs come from the 1920s, 1930s, 1940s.
Well, a lot of the old standards, right?
Yeah, of course, yeah. The songbook. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's there.
Okay, so
I was, so my late husband was English and a performer, a crooner.
English,
and,
he was like a refugee too.
Yeah, it's true, true. Came up from Australia and England. So we were driving by the old Shorewood one day and said, hey, let's stop in, and bought it out of the sheriff's sale and shook hands and walked around and said, oh, my word, this is so big. But we can do this. But the expectation always was that performers are to be respected, that performers are to be listened to, and that the audience is supposed to be quiet. And so Andrew came on board as a performer and said, I like this.
Okay, Andrew Wallace, what do you play?
I'm a singer primarily and also a pianist.
Oh,
I started out as a singer in boys' choirs and different children's singing groups back in St. Cloud, where I'm from, and then kind of learned pretty quickly in my teenage years that if I ever wanted to make a living playing music, I should probably learn how to play an instrument. Otherwise, I'd have to hire somebody else to accompany me every time I wanted to perform. So I sat down at the piano one day when I was 16, 17, and started figuring out how to play the piano, and got a gig during college in a bar in St. Cloud playing every single Saturday night. And my parents and I were both surprised that I was actually making money playing music, and I might be able to actually finance my college playing music, which I did. So my father's hope of me being a lawyer started to fade away when he realized that I was going down this track to be a music major at St. John's instead of being a lawyer. I did end up majoring in both political science and music, but I think his concerns, that's right, yeah. I think their concerns were a little bit, put aside a little bit when I started playing so many different shows and gigs.
But when I met you, the first thing you said to me is, I don't play any song written after 1950s. 60s.
Yeah. That's pretty true. That was probably a little bit wishful thinking. But the truth is, people call me an old soul, and I always say, well, I am musically, I guess you could say I'm an old soul, or you could just say that I have really good taste.
Wow.
Does that sound not so self-effacing, does it? No, but seriously, I think that the greatest songs are from the Great American Songbook, the period between 1920 and 1960, when songs were written with such intention, such deliberation, such technique by great poets, great lyricists who then worked with great songwriters, great harmonic geniuses, and they worked together to create this incredible library of material. And then great singers interpreted those great songs. Now we live in a world where every single singer is supposed to also write their own songs and produce their own songs. And there's only a few people in the history of the planet that are great enough to do all those things. I think the greatest music was made then. Well, I mean, that's a matter of opinion, but, you know, I mean, I would say Prince, Michael Jackson, you know, Paul McCartney, these people were the very few geniuses that could do all of those things, write, produce, sing, play, be multi-instrumentalists and all these things. But I think the greatest music, the greatest material came out of that period. And so I've sort of devoted my life up to this point at keeping that material alive, exposing it to people, trying to go and find old Broadway tunes that have been discarded and forgotten about and bring them back to people and reintroduce them.
Well, Andrew, I think I'm compatible with all that. I like a lot of the old stuff. So that's how I grew my collection, started with things in the 20s and built up from there. Like, if jazz-wise, you know, I went to the, you know, the Louis Armstrong, you know, the Hot Five and Hot Seven, Dick mm-hmm. Black, and I worked my way up. I'm going to write like the 1950s now.
You're getting close. Right, exactly.
You're breakthrough.
And we don't want to forget Rick Davis because he's got the best name in the house.
That's right. At least the easiest to pronounce.
So where are you from, Rick? Minneapolis. From here. This town. Hometown here.
And are you a musician?
I used to be. Okay. I'm not anymore.
How can you stop being a musician?
I love sports better.
Sports?
Yes.
So what did you play?
I played drums. When I was in high school, in junior high school, and then I had the choice between playing drums or playing football and running track, and I took the sports end of it and went that way.
And but who
I
did still you play drums with?
I played drums with Prince. We went to the high school together. We lived in the same neighborhood together. We grew up together. And
you could have been in the movie, but no, you had to play football. Well, actually, I did the same thing, too. I was taking piano lessons and quit to play football. This was not, you know, I never really learned the piano. I went through the Green Book. Remember that?
Okay.
So, how do you fit into this crooner's musical community?
I run crooners. I'm the food, the beverage part of the service part of crooners.
Wow, I need to get to know you, too, then.
Yes, you do.
So do you serve bread and chocolate? Is that the traditional?
We serve bread and we serve chocolate. Yes,
separately.
But
we
you can
the best
combine
Margaret
them.
Chocolate cake.
Wow. Now, do you have a musical preference?
I'm jazz. I'm in heaven at crooners. Oh yeah, I love jazz.
Well, my father played jazz, so I kind of had an ear for even as a kid when everyone else was listening to the Beatles and Beats and Trio and stuff. Joni Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of her?
Tonight we have a tribute show to Joni Mitchell.
Well, this won't even be aired.
No, but
it'll be history.
We'll repeat it.
Hmm?
We'll repeat it.
Well, history is meant to be repeated.
Yeah,
right?
That's right.
Well, it sounds like your whole organization is kind of like a living museum of the best music.
Yeah, I
think you
so.
Could say that.
I would say that, and I think
that. I waited a long time for the last.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about it in those terms, but I would actually have to agree with you. Yes. I mean, seriously, we are so fortunate to have crooners in this town and to have the depth of talent that's in this town. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
I mean,
absolutely.
Whether it's bass players or piano players or drummers, singers, we're very lucky.
About other instrumentalists who will return. We're going to take a brief break here on Synapse.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
And we're back here with Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We have the Crooners crew with us today. Mary T., Andrew Wallace, and Rick Davis, who together, they're kind of the honchos, right? The makers and the drivers and the movers. I'm Steve LeBeau, and Mary T., you were just saying that one way you can exist is because of the wealth of talent we have in the Twin Cities.
Yes, I would agree with that, that, you know, we do have people who we fly in. We do have people that we recruit, Bobby Lyle, John Weber, other people that recruit Emmett Cohen from New York or Houston or New Orleans. But the depth of performers here in this town allows us to have two or three shows a night with excellent, excellent music. Last night we actually had three shows.
Are you open all night?
No.
No. We're Steve, we're located in Fridley. Fridley closes up about 10:30. The parking is easy. We're on Moore Lake. The site is beautiful, but it closes up about 10:30, right, guys?
Yeah. Although we're going to be extending Fridays and Saturdays, we're going to start having we have a beautiful new bar area that's going to have a stage and a third piano. We already have two pianos. We're going to have a third piano in the bar area so that after the show's let out, we'll have additional entertainment, sort of an afterglow after the show in that space. We have three music rooms in which each will have a piano. And in the summer, we have four because we have an outdoor tent next to the lake.
So in the Dunsmore Jazz Room, we have a 9-foot Steinway that Andrew, with some other help, sort of searched to find the perfect piano, which they found in the Steinway warehouse or
factory in Long Island City. Yeah.
And chipped it.
We played, I went out to New York with a great pianist that is a great friend of the club and plays the club very frequently that we met. I met through a bassist that plays the club quite frequently from the Peterson family here in town, Billy Peterson. And he and Dave Hazeltine, who's a wonderful pianist originally from Milwaukee that's lived in New York City for, I don't know, 30 years or so. Dave was in town playing with Billy, and Mary and I were talking about the fact that we needed to find the best piano that we could find for the Dunsmore room. And he said, well, come out to New York. That's where the best pianos are. So Mary sent me out on a mission to New York, and Dave Hazeltine and I went all around Manhattan to all these different piano retailers. We played thousands of pianos, but we couldn't find one that was just right, that was just perfect.
How fussy can you get?
Very.
Very fussy.
Because now people want to come to play our piano.
Well, I mean, you know, I like good music too, but how can you tell a bad piano?
It's not about a bad piano. It's about the difference between good and great pianos and superior, incredible pianos.
Well, when I was a teenager going out to buy stereos, the adage was, well, you know, use your ear. If you can't tell the difference between the $100 speaker and the $1,000 speaker, go with the $100 speaker. But are you seeing your ear was so refined you could tell the difference between these
the touch
that weren't quite...
I think that Mary's belief and mine as well is that if the artists are in a comfortable situation and we give them the tools to create to the best of our ability, it brings the music to another level. And so I think that our philosophy in the search for the best piano was really about giving the artist the best instrument, the best canvas that we could give them to create on, because the belief was they can tell the greatest pianists in the world, they can tell the difference between a good piano and a great piano. And when they sit down at that piano and it moves them because of the depth of the instrument and the quality of the instrument, it's going to transcend the music to a whole nother level. And that's exactly what's happened, which is why people are going all over New York City talking about this piano in Fridley, Minnesota, that they want to come and play because it's such a great instrument.
So tell the story of the final consultant that we hired to say, yes, should this be the piano?
So it was a fascinating thing because I was just going to send this guy out to the Steinway factory to give us the final check mark. And his name is Fred Hirsch. He's one of the greatest jazz pianists in the world. He also picks the pianos for the Village Vanguard and for all of the great jazz clubs and concert halls all over the world. And a good friend of mine is a friend of Fred's and said, you got to have Fred go and make sure that the piano is the right one. And so I said, okay. So I called Fred and he said, sure, I'd love to go take a look at the piano for you. And Mary said, you have to go out there and meet him there. And I said, really? He could just go there. He probably goes there all the time. She said, no, you need to go. You need to be there. So I went out to New York and met and was sitting in the lobby at the Steinway factory. And the secretary's there eating an apple, you know, answering the phone. And I'm thinking, well, this is going to be really strange. Fred's going to show up and I'm not even going to know where the piano is and how to find it. And there was nobody there. And all of a sudden, his town car pulls up because he lives in Soho in Manhattan, and he had to take the car out to Queens where the factory was. And no sooner the car pulls up than the entire board of directors of Steinway tramples me. We're going out to the town car. I couldn't even get out the door because all of a sudden they showed up. Oh, Mr. Hirsch. Oh, so good to see you, Mr. Hirsch, you know, and all of this and followed him into the. He is the guy. Yeah. And he is the great pianistic wisdom of the universe
but
for them.
But you said that he went up, everybody was standing around the piano. He played just a couple of notes and he said, this is your piano.
That's right.
And I'm like, for $300, he should play the entire song, which he then did, right?
Yeah. Well, he like Mary said, he played a couple notes.
Well, that's $100 a
note. Yeah. Right, right. And he said, okay, you should buy this. This is really good. Basically, he was saying, there's nothing else I need to say. That's how good the piano was. And then everybody was sort of standing there awkwardly like, oh, come on, Fred, you know, play a little bit more than that. Because it was so beautiful. His touch on that instrument. And so he did. So he played a whole tune. And of course, when he got done, everybody applauded and we bought the piano. And then we still had to get it back to Minnesota, which was a whole nother story. But eventually we got it back there. And the first concert we had was the great jazz pianist, Benny Green, who of course played in the Ray Brown, one of the last pianists with Ray Brown. And he came in and played a couple concerts on it. And it was like, wow, when we got that instrument into that room. It's a very special room because it's only about 25 by 50 feet. So it's a very small cabaret room. And when it gets full of people, there's just an incredible energy in that room and the acoustics with that instrument. So the first concert we had in there, we knew that the special room had gone to another level.
Well, no, just for us mere mortals, I didn't those three notes, but just the what, I mean, I know there's just probably the feel of the keys. I mean, how do you judge a good piano? The feel of the keys, the action? Right?
They're extremely, as you've already spoken to, they're extremely, extremely subtle things. Steinway has a couple people on staff that play the pianos. It's sort of like when they call it, a lot of people call it birthing the instrument, right? So every piano is made the exact same way. There's every single Steinway D, which is their concert 9-foot model that usually go into concert halls that we have in this teeny little Dunsmore room, which is what is so unusual and cool about it. But every single one is made the exact same way by, you can go take a tour of the factory. It's fascinating. The same, you have guys that have been working for Steinwave third, fourth generation, and they're these big lumberjack guys, and they're bending the piano shells to get the curve in the piano, and they're made the exact same way. They're aged, the wood is aged, and everything is done, you know, very, very similar for every instrument. But because of subtle little things about the wood and different details, the pianos come out differently. And they have two people on staff that play all the pianos. And they choose the top 5% of all the pianos made every year. There's 200 Steinway Ds made every single year. And about the top 10 of those, or 8 or 9, something like that, are chosen by these people who are extremely discerning and know how what the greatest characteristics are in acoustically and sonically for a piano. And they choose those top 10 pianos, and those are called CNA pianos, which stands for Concert and Artist Division. Those top pianos go out with the Steinway artists, who are, of course, the most famous names in showbiz. Those very special pianos go out and tour with Steinway artists, and they go into the biggest concert halls. Our piano was a CNA piano. So when that piano got out of manufacturing, it was played against the 200 other pianos that were made that year, and they selected it as one of the best sounding, one of the greatest, as far as the action, the touch, things that you've already spoken to. But I think really what it comes down to is the sound of the instrument. It's not as much from the player's perspective, although that has something to do with it. It's just the ring, the resonance of the instrument. Some pianos you play and they sound beautiful, and some pianos have what they call sort of a bloom to them. The sound just sort of, it just sort of wafts upward. It has a real rise to it.
Well, this is sounding kind of mystical.
It is, in a way.
It is, isn't it? It's exciting.
You can't really explain something like that.
From a tree facing north.
Right. Right.
Bend it. They have 9-foot men that bend it.
Yeah.
But the truth is,
you know, like the Stradivarius of pianos?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The truth is, though, it's with anything else in life, it's quality, right? You know when you hear something that's really great, that it's really great. You don't think, oh, it could be, if it was like this, it would be not quite as great, but it would still be great. You just go, wow, that's really great.
So amongst musicians, do they say, hey, you got to go to the crooners and play this piano?
So oh, yeah. I know that when a performer comes, we try to treat them really well in terms of our food is great. We have a green room. We try to take good care of them. But I really know it's because they want to play that piano.
Really? It's a draw.
It's a draw.
The piano, sure,
that,
yeah.
That piano is a draw. Some performers only want to perform in the Dunsmore room. But on the other hand, we have a really nice grand piano in the main stage as well. And it's a nice piano, and it works for a lot of bands, and so we don't want to downplay that. And now we're going to get another piano in the bar as well, which will be excellent. But this one is like just special.
When I go to New York and talk to artists, they are already familiar with the piano.
But it's the whole ambiance. You know, it's only 80 people, and the room has all windows on it overlooking Moore Lake. And it has we put a chandelier in that room. So it's just also, the piano is super, but we have it in this magnificent space for it as well.
And there's very, 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 very few rooms left in the world like that. You know, people, a lot of the old school New York entertainers that come through that have been around, compare it to the Algonquin room or the Carlisle, of course, is still there. But the Oak room, there used to be all kinds of these rooms in New York City, and now they're all private event spaces because they can make more money having weddings and brunches in them than having them as music spaces.
Right.
So it's such a unique thing, the Dunsmore room, that is so rare to find.
Well,
But also on all
I'm
of...
I'm still stuck on the panel. Does the panel have like a name? Did you name it?
Not really.
No.
We've thought about it, but...
Whatever name it wants.
Right. Well, I think we have a contest in the making.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. So I definitely think it has a feminine female quality to it, which fits into our women-owned business model. It's not a man, I can tell you that.
But
it's,
I think the other thing that that.
Okay. I
think so the other thing that makes this room and the main stage as well is that we don't tolerate any talking, because what's important is the piano and the performers. And so we tell people to shut their phones off. We call, refer to it as our gift. This is our gift to you. So turn those phones off. Well, yeah, but
pretty much.
Pretty much. Yeah, that is exactly.
So, Rick, do you hire a bouncer just to keep people quiet?
No.
He is me.
No.
About looking ahead to Shusher?
No. It's just they follow Mary T's word.
Well, it sounds like a church.
Well, it's more a little lively than a church, but well, yeah, it's entertaining.
But there's a sense of, you know, majesty and, you know, get this big piano, this kind of this mystical piano.
Yeah.
So what do you like about working at Crooners?
I like the jazz. I like the people. I love the setting. You know, you couldn't get a better place to work to, but go there and work every day. You get to hear great music, and then there's food, and there's people, and it's reaction, and it's quiet, and you can go through three different venues. You can be outside on the patio, or you can be in the tent, or you can be in the Dunsmore room, you can be in the main stage. You have so much to pick from, and everywhere you get great music, and then you get great food. What more could you ask for?
That's right.
Oh, a good boss.
And a great boss, not a good one, a great boss.
About the wealth of talent in terms of musicians. What about workers? Are there a lot of workers? A lot of, like in some fields, are running out of good workers. IT and...
We got great workers from back of the house to front of the house. You always work and nurture on workers, and the people that love being there love music.
But is the Twin Cities a good place to find workers?
A lot. You have a lot of good workers here. It's a good place for the restaurant business for workers.
Now, how many jazz clubs are there in the Twin Cities?
Like, there's a lot of clubs that have jazz, you know, that have jazz once a week, twice a week. There's very few clubs that have music in general, not speaking jazz, but that have music 7 days a week. There's just a handful.
But is that good to be in a city that has multiple musical venues?
So my philosophy, whether it's been healthcare or even humanitarian work, is that we're all in it together. So my preference would be to have a strong, healthy music scene where performers have lots of different options to perform. I like it when they, you know, were a priority, but I like it that there's multiple places for them to perform. There's multiple places for people to go to, and then they can get hooked on music, and then they will look at Crooners as the want-to place to go. But I also feel that way in terms of my healthcare company. I mean, I think if something hits the news that's bad, it reflects on all of us. When there's some abuse towards a senior, that reflects bad on all of us. So we want to have a strong healthcare industry. We, you know, in terms of humanitarian work, I feel really strongly about that as well, that when we hear these stories from Oxfam, it reflects badly on all of the humanitarian organizations. So my philosophy since day one has been, we're not competitors. We're in this together. We need to work together. We need to get the best practices. We need to get the best workers. We need to give the best service. We need to create the best community.
And have the best piano.
And actually having the best piano and the team that I have, yes, all of that makes it possible.
Well, we're here on Synapse Think Tank of the Air talking with the Crooners crew. We have Mary Chesbold, Mary T, to make it easy, Andrew Wallish, music director, and Rick Davis. What's your title?
General manager.
General manager. Well, it's like the general.
The general.
Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. We'll be back in a moment.
Welcome back to Synapse, Think Tank of the Air. I'm Steve Lebeau here with Mary Kesselhold, Mary T. of Crooners, the founder, and do you have a title there?
Anything you want.
Okay.
She's the boss.
Fill in the blank, the boss. Andrew Wallace, music director, also a singer. Now, do you get to play that piano and sing at work, or do you have to give it over to the people you hire?
I actually play at Crooners as much as I want, which I try to be careful because I don't want to look like I'm book myself into the club too much, but I have. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I do almost monthly. I do a salute to Frank Sinatra. So I have a 10-piece band. We play in the main stage. And that's so fun because the main stage has sort of a vibe of like an old Las Vegas showroom. You know, there's dinner and cocktail service before and during the show. There's booths. It's very intimate, but it also is a larger room. It seats 180 people. It is. It is. And it's got a nice big stage with, light cans. It feels like a Las Vegas showroom. And so doing the Sinatra show in there, it fits so naturally. And people come and they really have that experience.
So you have a 10-piece band. So that
10-piece with six horns.
Yep. Yeah, Acme plays on that stage, and their 17-piece Acme jazz band plays there once a month.
Yep, and then I also play in the Dunsmore Room as well on the Steinway piano. So I do shows with local performers a lot, duo performances with people like Connie Evingson and Lucia Newell And then I also play. I've played in every venue at the club. Actually,
Peterson played in the bar.
We played in the bar last night. It was actually the first concert in the new bar, and we were all very surprised because of all of our venues. We have no side conversation policy. Turn your cell phones off. No talking. In the bar venue, it's going to be more of a after. Kind of glow after the show, so there's going to be some talking that will be allowed.
But weren't you happy with?
But it was completely silent last night, and so we realized that what we've cultivated at Crooners is a place where music is so appreciated that even right 5 feet from a bar, and the people were not. You know, teetotalers, they were enjoying the bar, but they were enjoying the music more. And so they were completely respectful and were listening to so into the music. So that's what we've created the last few years is this reverence for the art, for the music. And we've taught our guests that.
That's right. It's community. It's all about community.
It is, though. It's reverential. It is, in a way.
Because the truth is, if you have a stage and you have live performance up there and people are talking, you might as well have overhead music.
That's right.
Yeah. You do not need live performers.
Or karaoke.
Yeah.
You know?
When you have live performers who are singing or playing their heart out, the best you can do for them is give them your respect, is to give them your full attention. And that's really... Rick has done a great job of training the servers to bend down at the tables, to be quiet when they're taking orders, because yes, we want people to eat, we want people to drink, we want people to have service.
Bend down, like kneeling?
Yeah, yes. Like the church. Like you really are into this church.
Are.
I got to think about that now.
We're also here with General Rick Davis. And how did you, you grew up playing with Prince,
yeah,
drums.
Yeah.
He wasn't playing jazz. What was he playing?
He was playing everything. Prince was a genius at playing music. But I grew up with Prince, and a lot of things people say about Prince, he was a good athlete. He was. And besides music, he was a good all-around athlete. Baseball, basketball, playing up, growing up with him in South Minneapolis. So he did it all.
Music to go play.
No, he didn't. He did what he loved to do, and that was music. And he was fantastic at it. He was a genius at it.
Well, how did you learn about jazz?
My aunt's son was Franklin Morgan, a jazz artist. And so we had jazz in our family for forever. I just loved the music. My grandfather always listened to jazz when I was little, and we had stations like KUXL, which were old R&B stations that he listened to. And I just grew up in, you know, soul music, R&B, jazz, and it just carried through. And I love jazz. I mean, this is heaven for me to be here. I can hear jazz every day, different artists.
Actually, I was raised, my father played jazz. That wasn't his main job, but he did, you know. So he would play the records, and so I had I got an ear for it as a kid. And so then when I went into college, well, I mean, you know, rock and roll for a high schooler, but then what, the Beatles broke up, Hendrix died.
Right.
You know, what else is there? So then I listened to classical and jazz. But the people that you hire, do they have to learn about jazz there on the job training?
No, they don't have to learn about it. I mean, people that work there, all of them don't like jazz. It's just different variety of music that they like. But
no, but I'm wondering if they knew jazz before they worked there.
Well, some did and some don't. You know, but they just grow to like the music and the atmosphere of the place. It is so fun to be in, and stressless would be a good word for it. And the performances are always magnificent.
Most of the staff probably don't know anything about jazz when they first start working at Crooners. And then I think it's interesting because the most unlikely person to appreciate jazz might be captivated by a particular group that's coming through, and they may be somebody that has never heard of jazz or has said I don't like jazz themselves, and they'll end up, you know, a server, for instance, might go end up buying the CD of that performer at the end of their shift because they got so into that particular act that night.
But in the main stage, we have a huge variety. We have Mick Sterling doing a lot of his tribute shows, you know, Bruce Springsteen, other people. So we do have a variety of music as well, you know.
Well, I have to ask you that I know that you booked Garrison Keillor.
Yes, yes, shows. Yes.
Now, he was blacklisted from the public radio, but now you can have him in your community.
So we actually made a contact with him. And we recruited him because we felt that Crooners would be a very safe place. He could start in the Dunsmore room with 80. He has a great pianist that plays with him. He could do some songs. He could tell some stories. And that we promised him that it would be a really good experience for him. And so he finally said yes. And then he played the main room. And then he came back. And so he was just here about 2 weeks ago or a week and a half ago, and he sells out every time he's there, and we really have had no bad feedback from it, but I just believe that he is a performer and that he talks to all of us, and so we're absolutely delighted that he chose to sort of make his comeback at Crooners, and it's been incredibly successful, so we're very happy about that.
Like you work with refugees.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
And, of course, now his career is in full comeback again, and he's playing at Town Hall in New York, and he's headlining in San Francisco and doing this huge national holiday tour.
But we tell him not to forget us.
He's going to be at the Pantages, but he's committed to coming back to Crooners early this next year, so we're looking forward to that.
So you saved him from the doldrums.
I think so.
Yeah.
It's a safe environment.
Now, do your grandmother played guitar. Do you do any music yourself, Mary?
So somebody once said, like you don't know anything about music. And I said, excuse me, I played the bass drum in the junior high band. I mean, like, what more would one need to know?
There you go.
But that is it, actually.
So you and Rick can be like the percussion set.
There
There you go.
There we go.
We don't have any
drum
bass,
core.
We don't have any bass drums anymore. So,
Rick, do you feel like playing? I mean, is it part of you like a suppressed musician?
When I go to a concert, when Bobby Lyle was there a couple of weeks ago, you could just feel the energy that he was playing. He was playing the Steinway, and that night he was playing the Steinway and the Hammond B3 at the same time. That was just fabulous show. So, yeah, the energy of the artists do come through. I mean, you do feel juicy.
Do you feel like you wish you could have
me? No. No. I just still enjoy the music, you know. Yeah. I wish one of my kids were a piano player. So.
How many kids do you have?
I have five. Yeah.
And no piano players?
None. None.
Any musicians?
No.
Athletes.
Athletes.
Athletes. Boy, you got to watch out for those sports.
Yeah. Smart athletes, though. Education-wise, they're very well in school.
Well, that's good, but it's kind of like being a dancer. You know, at some point, your muscles go.
That's everybody.
It's amazing, though, because I think if a lot of the performers that come through the club are any indication, music can keep you young. And yeah. a lot of these performers. We have Marilyn May coming in the first week of October. She's 91. I think she's going on 92.
Maybe six? Yeah.
She's doing six shows. We just had her about, what was that, March. We had her in March. Completely sold out crowds. An unbelievable talent. And
we have Dave Carr playing. And,
Dave Carr, our local tenor sax god here in town, is going to be 90. He actually just turned 89, so he'll be 90 next year. And he just plays better than ever and is at Crooner's several times a month. Very inspiring.
But we do try to support local high school bands. We like it if they come on a Sunday afternoon and they do their concerts for their family members, because we do see that as part of our role to give an audience to younger performers. When young people come to the Dunsmore Room, I know that we all three of us make an attempt to go talk with them and tell them how wonderful it is. We think that they're coming to these musical shows. So we really do try to encourage that kind of younger population to appreciate music and to make sure that they come and see, if they play the trumpet, they come and see one of them.
I think that's such an interesting phenomenon, the idea of a jazz band in school.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know if you'd probably enjoy what KBEM, right?
Oh, yeah.
Love that station. Yeah. Yes.
They'll have jazz bands on some of the programs. It's kind of funny to hear these young kids interested in jazz when, by and large, I think a lot of people don't listen to jazz at all. It's kind of sad. They don't know all the standards, the songwriters from
So, I mean, that's part of what we're trying to do, is sort of expand the music experience for people. And that's why, like, when Andrew and Billy played last night, it was free for people to come and to experience it. So every once in a while we have free shows, so we're hoping people will come and have that experience to listen to music in an environment that appreciates music. So it's not just having music, but you have to be somewhere where the music is appreciated and everybody's paying attention and the wait staff knows the quiet behavior so that the performance isn't interrupted.
So it's like an educational church.
Sure. It's like a community, an educational church. Yes.
I know you've mentioned your humanitarian works. What about you guys? Are you guys slackers or do you have a...
Well, compared to her, we're slackers.
We're slackers, yeah.
But that goes for most people, I guess. I serve on a couple different nonprofit boards, but that's about the Youth Chorale of Central Minnesota, which is a really wonderful select choir of high school singers up where I'm from in St. Cloud. I actually just left the board of that about a year ago, and I'm now currently serving on the board of Jasmine Orchestra, which is a very wonderful big band here in the Twin Cities of professional musicians that put on about three or four concerts a year and work in schools doing various educational efforts working with young people to promote jazz and jazz education. I've been on the board of Jazzmen, I think, for 3 years now, trying to really step up the educational component, because I really believe in the power of jazz in education, just like the wonderful model over at KBEM that you mentioned. Crooners has been involved with Jazz 88 very deeply and intimately since the beginning of Crooners. We've been a big sponsor of KBEM. We do a lot of advertising with them, and part of it is that they have found a very effective way to communicate with the jazz base, jazz listeners and fans here in the Twin Cities. But another part of it is that we believe in their mission. We believe in empowering kids using jazz, using radio, using media, and giving kids powerful, positive experiences. In fact, Bobby Lyle, when Bobby Lyle was in town, not this past time we had him, but the time before, we actually worked with KBEM and set up a workshop so that Bobby went into North High School and did a clinic with the students there through the radio station and through Crooners. And then a bunch of students from the high school came and were able to see Bobby's show. They were able to work with him at the school, and he was a sort of very positive role model for them. And we believe in those sorts of things, and I think it's a big part of our work and our collaboration with Jazz 88.
And Rick, what do you do for the good of the world?
A lot of the kids that work there are high school students and first-year kids in college, and work with them and helping them get through and teaching them how to handle working at Crooners. A while ago, when my kids were younger, I was sat on the board of Head Start. Yeah, that is doing.
That's a full-time
job. That's a full-time
right
job by itself.
But I also want to say that I think Rick and Andrew really help support making Crooners a place where we can have events that support the work. So I do think like last week we had an event for Release Minnesota 8. And you guys just did an incredible job with the sound, with the music, with the food. We've had ones for Healthcare for All Minnesotans. And the work that my staff does to make it possible, you know, I get the credit, but I only just set it up. And everybody else makes it happen. And so this is a great use of the club from my perspective. People get to hear great music. They get to have great food. And the revenue, some of the revenue from those events goes to those organizations. So
you're building a community there, but your doors are also open to the wider community.
Right, right, right.
Where is it?
It's on 65 Central, just past 694, right on Moore Lake, sort of kitty corner from Medtronic's world headquarters.
Oh, so if you keep going on Central, you'll find it?
You'll find
absolutely.
It. On your right.
On your right.
I'm going to try it.
All right.
Please.
Please. We look for it.
Please.
Talking on this program of Synapse to the Crooners top crew. Boy, we've been learning about their mystical piano and all this stuff. And do you let the kids from high schools play on that piano, or is it like
sure
guarded?
Yeah,
it's guarded.
We prefer
play,
that.
Guarded.
We prefer that toddlers, when they're out to dinner with their families. Once in a while, I see some kid pounding on the piano, and I look at their parents and I go, really? You're going to let your child beat on, you know, so, but of course, high school kids come all the time, you know, to Crooner's dinner with their parents, and they come and ask, can we play the piano? And we say, of course, you know, because.
Sure, wash your hands.
Yeah, right, exactly.
So I want to tell you one cute story, and I don't know their names. So then I can't tell you that, but, you know, you can make love happen at Crooner's by letting some man play the piano for some woman he hasn't seen for 38 years.
Oh my God.
That's my story.
I'm going to cry. Okay, well, thanks for joining us here, Mary Chesfold, Mary T., the owner of Crooners and the boss, Andrew Wallace, musical director, and General Rick Davis, the general manager. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for listening to Synapse. Think Tank of the Air. I'm Leo Espinosa.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.